At dawn on a humid September morning, Jamaica woke to an ocean that felt wrong. The air tasted metallic, the sea breathed in long, unnatural pulses, and fishermen along the Portland coastline swore the horizon looked closer than it had the night before. They didn't yet know the name Melissa, or that a storm gathering more than 500 miles away was warming itself on some of the hottest Atlantic waters ever recorded. Within 24 hours, it would explode into a Category 5 beast, spinning with a precision that baffled every forecasting model in the region. By the time the first feeder bands reached Jamaican shores, the island sensed the truth. This wasn't another hurricane season scare. This was a once-in-a-century climate event, a storm fed by an overheated ocean and atmospheric instability that scientists had warned about for years. Before the day ended, the coastline would be reshaped, communities submerged, and the country's understanding of storms forever rewritten. This is the story of Melissa, how she formed, struck, destroyed, and ultimately reshaped not only Jamaica's landscape, but the way a nation understood the future. Chapter 1, The Day the Sky Split Open. It began far from land, as most Caribbean storms do. An unremarkable cluster of thunderstorms rolling off the west coast of Africa. Meteorologists at the NOAA Ocean Prediction Center flagged it as a weak tropical disturbance, something that warranted a yellow circle on a monitoring map, but little more. Caribbean forecasters watched, but no one expected the disturbance to evolve into anything historical. What changed, almost too quickly for existing models, was the temperature of the Atlantic. By late August, the ocean east of the Caribbean hovered at 31 degrees Celsius, 88 degrees Fahrenheit, shattering climatological expectations. These warm waters, extending unusually deep into the ocean column, created a vertical strip of high-octane fuel. The disturbance fed on it like wildfire on gasoline. Within 48 hours, wind speeds doubled. Rain bands broadened. Convection deepened. On satellite images, the storm's eye sharpened with unsettling clarity. The system skipped the familiar crawl from tropical depression to tropical storm. Instead, it jumped into hurricane status, then rapidly intensified, reaching Category 4 in just 18 hours. This acceleration alarmed the Jamaican Meteorological Service. Lead forecaster Dr. Nisha Thompson called an emergency early morning briefing. Her voice, normally calm, carried an edge. This is not standard intensification, she told the press. We are observing behavior consistent with warm core anomalies driven by climate-induced ocean temperatures. Jamaica must prepare. Across fishing towns, Old Harbor Bay, Anato Bay, Port Antonio, reactions varied. Some seasoned captains squinted at the horizon and shrugged. Hurricanes were part of island life. Many had survived Gilbert in 1988 and Ivan in 2004. Nothing, they believed, could be worse. But a few noticed troubling signs. In Port Maria, the sea behaved strangely. Large, slow curls rising without wind. In Long Bay, dogs barked at nothing. Barometric pressure readings dropped faster than residents had ever experienced. In Kingston, government officials met behind closed doors. The country had grown comfortable with preparedness protocols, but Melissa was different. The storm was intensifying near Jamaica's doorstep. Evacuation time was limited. That evening, Prime Minister Andrew Clark addressed the nation. Melissa is not a typical storm. Prepare for a worst-case scenario. Jamaicans reacted in familiar ways, boarding windows, filling water drums, buying candles. Yet many underestimated the storm's scale. After all, storms often veered north at the last minute. But Melissa did the opposite. She curved toward Jamaica. Meteorologists scrambled to understand the phenomenon. Models predicted a northward track, but an unexpected ridge of high pressure built above the Atlantic, locking Melissa into a westward trajectory. The island found itself directly in the storm's projected path. By the morning of impact, the signs were unmistakable. The sky turned an ashy, muted yellow. Birds vanished. Offshore, waves grew in height, smashing against seawalls with a pattern that felt rhythmic, almost deliberate. On the Palisados Road leading to the Norman Manley International Airport, seawater splashed onto the asphalt. Fishermen pulled their boats inland, tying them to trees, trucks, and, in one case, the foundation of a bar. At 10:12 a.m., the first outer band hit Portland. Sheets of rain hammered rooftops. Wind gusts shook utility poles. Residents watched as the sea swallowed the first few meters of beach. Inside meteorological offices, screens lit with grim data. Melissa's sustained winds, 175 miles per hour, gusts over 200 miles per hour. Central pressure 890 millibars lower than any recorded storm in Jamaica's modern history. Jamaica was about to face a storm born from the new climate era, one fueled not just by nature, but by decades of atmospheric warming. And the island, despite preparation, was not ready. The question now hung over the island like a shadow. How do you prepare for a storm that behaved unlike anything Jamaica had ever seen? Chapter 2, When the Ocean Came Ashore. The first full-force strike came at 1:47 p.m., when Melissa's eyewall slammed directly into Portland. Houses rattled as if gripped by a giant hand. Trees bent like wet straw. The wind screamed, a constant, deafening howl that drowned out every other sound. Across Port Antonio, rooftops peeled away like tin foil. The historic marina, usually bustling with fishermen and tour boats, vanished under a wall of water. Storm surge, measured later at nearly 22 feet, rushed inland, carrying debris, cars, and sections of wooden homes. Local boat captain Jerome J. Mann Douglas recalled, "It wasn't water, it was the sea walking through the town. I never see anything like that. The ocean had a voice." In St. Mary, Anato Bay faced the storm's northern quadrant, the deadliest side. Waves obliterated the fishing beach, pulling entire boats into the churning surf. The Anglican Church, a century-old stone building, lost its stained glass windows in a single burst of wind. The hospital experienced catastrophic failure. Backup generators, though elevated, succumbed when ankle-deep seawater breached the emergency wing. Nurses rushed to evacuate patients, pushing beds through dark hallways lit only by flickering flashlights. St. Thomas fared no better. The Morant Bay Pier, a landmark for generations, splintered into fragments. Each broken piece of timber carried inland like a missile. Behind it came the full wrath of Melissa's surge, engulfing neighborhoods in minutes. By 3 p.m., communications were failing. Cell towers bent under pressure, then toppled. Radio antennas snapped. Rescue services lost contact with outposts across the island's eastern flank. Yet even amid the chaos, stories of survival emerged. In Manchianille, a mother shielded her children under a concrete staircase as their house disintegrated around them. In Preston Hill, farmers used machetes to cut their way out of fallen bamboo while winds still howled. In Buff Bay, a taxi driver ferried trapped residents to higher ground until the floodwaters overtook his vehicle. The storm's midpoint brought the moment that scientists would later study most intensely, the physical reshaping of Jamaica's northern coastline. Satellite imagery taken after landfall revealed entire beaches swept away, mangrove forests ripped out by the roots, a new inlet carved near Robins Bay, eroded cliff faces collapsing into the sea, coral reefs damaged by sediment and debris. Jamaica's map had literally changed. Meanwhile, regional agencies scrambled. The Caribbean Disaster Emergency Management Agency, CDAE, activated multi-nation protocols. The Cayman Islands warned residents to brace for indirect effects. Haiti declared a pre-impact state of emergency. Cuba positioned military brigades for potential rescue operations. Inside Jamaica, however, the nights were darkest. As the eye passed over central parishes, eerie calm settled briefly. Survivors stepped outside, seeing stars through a sky torn open, but knowing the second half of the storm, equally violent, was minutes away. When Melissa's backside whines arrived, they came from the opposite direction, tearing apart anything spared earlier. By dusk, Melissa had crossed into the Caribbean Sea, leaving behind an island soaked, shattered, and unrecognizable in many places. The new question emerged: could Jamaica survive the night, and what parts of its coastline would never return? Chapter 3, The Island Reborn from Ruin. The first helicopter survey the next morning revealed a Jamaica unlike any seen before. Entire neighborhoods along the eastern and northern shores lay under water or mud. Roadways were severed. Rivers had changed course. Beaches that once stretched for miles were gone. In Portland, sections of cliff had collapsed entirely, revealing new geological layers never exposed before. Marine scientists noted that sandbanks had shifted offshore, creating deeper channels and unexpected shallows near previously safe harbors. Comparisons to Hurricane Gilbert surfaced immediately, but older Jamaicans insisted Melissa was different. Gilbert destroyed, Melissa rearranged. She carved the land like a sculptor, altering both geography and identity. Human stories dominated the days that followed. More than 40,000 people were displaced, shelters filled beyond capacity. Volunteers, teachers, pastors, business owners banded together to distribute water and food. Diaspora communities across New York, London, Miami, and Toronto organized fundraisers within hours. Psychologists documented the emerging trauma: children frightened by the sound of rain, elderly residents unable to sleep without lights, families haunted by the sound of wind slamming into metal. Government response mobilized quickly. International partners delivered emergency supplies. Engineering teams assessed the structural integrity of bridges, highways, and utility grids. For weeks, drones mapped damaged coastlines, identifying zones where communities could not safely rebuild. Scientists presented their findings. Melissa's intensity was not coincidence, it was a signal. A product of warmer oceans, unstable atmospheric layers, and shifting global climate patterns. Jamaica had entered the era of superstorms, where Category 5 could no longer be considered rare. This led to a nationwide shift in policy. Construction codes were updated, coastal development zones were redrawn, emergency shelter capacities were reevaluated, and a new standard, informally called the Melissa Standard, emerged across the Caribbean, a redefinition of what worst-case scenario truly meant. Years later, Jamaica still bore the marks of Melissa's fury. New beaches formed in unexpected places, former fishing villages rebuilt farther inland. Coral reefs began slow recovery campaigns. Mangrove replanting efforts expanded across parishes, but the nation also gained something intangible, a deeper, crystallized understanding of resilience. Jamaicans had long known how to survive storms, but Melissa forced them to learn how to live with the consequences of a changing climate, how to face a future where hurricanes had new rules. In the final analysis, Melissa didn't just rewrite Jamaica's coastline. She reshaped the country's blueprint for survival, reminding an island forged by wind and waves that its greatest strength has always been the people who refuse to break. And so Jamaica emerged, not the same, but still standing. Not untouched, but unbroken.